Thanks a lot. First of all, it's a great pleasure to be here at this very renowned Institute for Theoretical Physics that I have not had the pleasure before to visit. Magnificent place. So I'm going to be talking about non-Lorentzian geometry, and in particular, an example of non-Lorentzian geometry, mostly called Newton-Cartan geometry, and its appearance in the gravity string theory and holography. I've decided to, because kind of a lot has happened, not just in the works that I've been involved, but many other people, to give. There will be some technicalities, but try to give more like an overview and review talk. So if you think that some of these appearances of non-Lorentzian geometry, or rather Newton-Cartan, in these subjects are too superficial, then since actually both Jelle and I, Jelle Hartong and I, are still here the rest of the week, more than welcome to come by and discuss. So, and indeed, this work is based on a series of papers where, as you can see, a constant of motion has been. Jelle Hartong is also here and happy to discuss. And actually, I should say, another world expert in Newton-Cartan geometry is in the audience, Eric Bergshoff. He gave a talk here some weeks ago, I think. So there's a good collection of expertise here to ask further questions. Okay, let me start with the introduction. I will give a quite extended introduction and motivation, but we'll try anyway not to dwell on it for half an hour, but a little bit shorter, like 15 minutes. But so, I think as many of you know, many branches of physics are not controlled by Lorentz symmetries, but by some broken symmetries. So some symmetries that are not Lorentz, but other effective symmetries. These can be broken Lorentz symmetries, it can be non-relativistic symmetries like the Barkman symmetry. There can even be systems without any boost symmetry. In fact, Jelle will give a nice talk on that on Friday. And such systems you actually see all over physics. In field theory, for example, condensed matter systems. In gravity, approximations to general relativity have other symmetries than Lorentz. I will be more specific about that, in fact. In holography, that goes beyond the ADS paradigm, but for other bulk spacetimes, we also see other symmetries than Lorentz symmetries, for example, just based on analyzing the global symmetries. As soon as you do holography, where on the boundary you have non-relativistic field theories living, which have other global symmetries than Poincaré, you expect that the corresponding geometry realizes these global symmetries locally, and hence it will be some other theory of gravity in principle. And as has been noticed before, and we'll also touch upon in this talk, also in certain limits of string theory, you also see cases where there's not Lorentz symmetry, but some other version. And in all this context, non-Lorentzian geometry, where I'll define a little bit better what I mean with non-Lorentzian, because it's not just a complement of Lorentzian. I mean something with it quite specific. But it has seen in recent years quite a revival and appearance in this context. And like I said, I will mostly focus on Newton-Cartan, like geometries, as an example. So let me start really from a very general perspective, just to make it sort of clear. We have learned over the last 100 years that the local symmetries of space and time are intricately connected to the actual geometry of space and time. And of course, one of the great insights of Einstein was to show that it's Riemannian geometry, that's the underlying geometry of space-times that have local Lorentz symmetry. And that's sort of embodied in the equivalence principle, that if you want the laws of physics in freely falling systems to reduce to special relativity, then you're naturally led to Riemannian geometry. But so Cartan, you know, post-Einstein, returned to Newtonian gravity and actually said, well, the very fact that you can formulate a theory of gravity in a diffeomorphism invariant way, that shouldn't be something very particular to GR. What's very particular about GR is not only its diffeomorphism invariance, but the characterizing principle is that you have local Lorentz. So can't I do the same for the Newtonian force of gravity? And that's what made him discover Newton-Cartan geometry. I will be more specific in terms of, for the people who haven't seen Eric's talk, what it really is. But it's another geometry that underlies the geometric formulation of Newton gravity. And in some sense, the geometry that you're led to by generalizing the Einstein equivalence principle now to the fact that local and that freely falling observers don't see Lorentz symmetries, but Galilean symmetries or Barkman symmetries. And as I've learned from Eric, it's, to visualize Newton-Cartan geometry, it's very nice to show a bread with slices. The slices here are equal times, and space goes like that. So intrinsic in Newton-Cartan geometry is that time and space are treated differently, as you would also expect from Galilean symmetries. I've included this ciabatta bread here to sort of indicate that such spacetimes can also be curved. For me, the flat slice spread is more like the flat. It's the analog of Minkowski space, and it can also be curved. And actually, the dynamics, that's a very intense area of research to describe how you go from, let's say, the Dutch bread to the Italian bread. Now, so I said I would spend one transparency on defining more properly what I mean, the term non-Lorentzian geometry. And so just to be, put it in Newton-Cartan in a slightly bigger perspective. And very generally, the way to think about it is take some symmetry algebra that includes at the least space and time translations and spatial rotations. And that's a collection of fundamental symmetries is often called Aristotelian symmetries, or the symmetries of absolute space-time. And now gauge, so the algebra at least includes this, could have more, like boost, Lorentz boost, Galilean boost, but gauge now the symmetry, gauge the symmetry generated by this algebra, and turn space and time translations, which you always have by definition, into local diffeomorphisms. That procedure in itself gives rise to a geometry. That's what I mean with non-Lorentzian geometry in an abstract way in general. And to make it concrete, of course, we know concrete examples of this. A particular algebra that has this is, of course, Poincaré algebra, and then you get Riemannian geometry. Another algebra that has this feature that has space and time translations and spatial rotations is the Galilean or its extension. I'll get back to what it is for the people that don't remember what this algebra is. Barkman, then you get a non-relativistic geometry, being Newton-Cartan geometry, or some torsional generalization of it that I will discuss. And you can also have systems with other boosts added. Carroll boost. This is more like the seagoing, the speed of light to infinity limit. This is the speed of light to zero limit, the ultra-relativistic limit. And likewise, you have some kind of Carolian geometry for that algebra. So this is what I mean with non-Lorentzian geometry. Now, just some keywords on the motivation. Actually, I think the exciting thing about this field is that there is something in it for everybody, because independent of whether you're interested in field theory or gravity or holography or string theory, there are some motivations and interesting aspects. So in field theory itself, so you don't have, you could be a person that doesn't care at all about gravity or holography or string theory for that matter. The very fact that such geometries exist is very useful to apply background field methods to field theories that have other symmetries than Lorentz. We're very used to using background field methods in relativistic theories because we know they naturally couple to fixed background Riemannian geometries. But it has really actually been sort of a not appreciated feature of Newton-Cartan geometry, for example, that non-relativistic field theories covariantly can couple to Newton-Cartan geometry, and then you can use response theory and anomaly, use covariance to classify anomalies very nicely using this covariant framework using Newton-Cartan geometry. It's important for covariant formulation of hydrodynamics, or I doubled it here, but yeah, a little talk on that coming Friday. Effective theories, non-ADS holography. I just give you some keywords for the field theory motivation. Now, on the gravity side, we as theoretical physicists would hopefully agree it's interesting in its own right to construct novel theories of gravity, just to understand gravity better. And also theories that follow from limits of Einsteinian gravity. On the gravity side, there are also applications in holography. Once you have new gravity theories, you have new bulk theories to which you can try at least to apply holography. And in that sense, it's relevant for non-ADS holography. On a more broader note, cosmology, condensed matter applications are there. And then coming to string theory, one very important overarching technique that has been used to understand string theory better is to, and also holography, is to take certain limits in which the theory becomes more tractable. And actually in limits, even before the sort of revival of Newton-Cartan geometry, non-relativistic structures and symmetries have seen in many cases. And in fact, in work by Joma and Oguri is a good example of that, of certain interesting corners of the space of string theories where you have non-relativistic strings. So in that sense, just coming back to these non-Lorentzian symmetries, so you can see these different cases of Aristotelian extending to Galilean or Poincaré or Carroll as sort of a classification framework for various things you want to do with it. I don't want to dwell too much on this transparency. I'll get to more equations, so it's not only going to be pictures. But I like to show this picture to really make the point that there is a whole non-Lorentzian universe with all the connections that we know through quantum gravity and black holes and holography and even purely field theoretic applications to low energy physics of novel type of geometries. If you just put Riemannian geometry in this setup, you can see the structure that has been studied over the last 30 years. And last but not least, the end of my motivation, non-relativistic geometry is also the key to understanding what I and other people like to call the seventh corner of the cube of physical theories. I'm sure most of you have seen this Bronstein cube with the three constants of nature, h bar, g Newton, and 1 over the speed of light. We all, I'm not going to repeat the names of all these corners. Sort of a holy grail in theoretical physics is quantum gravity, but there exists also something like the infinite speed of light limit of quantum gravity, called here Galilean quantum gravity. And actually, so far, no coherent approach to defining even what that corner is has existed. Idea is that it's already interesting here to find out what this classical theory is. It's going to be more strong indications, or more than strong, that this corner is going to be, even at the classical level, going to be more than just Newtonian gravity. And again, the key of this will be some kind of non-Lorentzian geometry. And actually, we have some work in progress on an action principle for the seventh corner, which is to appear. So that was introduction and motivation. So the outline is as follows. Unless the audience all says, we all remember Eric Birkshoff's talk, and you don't have to define again what Newton-Cartan geometry is. I'll skip it, but maybe it's not everybody was there. So I think I have to give you an introduction to what the geometry is. And then that's more like a review style. I want to show how this geometry enters in various settings having to do with non-relativistic physics. How this geometry is relevant for non-relativistic particles, non-relativistic field theory, or Rabe-Lipschitz gravity theories, non-ADS holography, and non-relativistic strings. And as a final part, I will report also on some recent work that we appeared on the archive in December on the fact that we actually have a well-defined limit of ADS CFT, in particular ADS3, CFT2, a well-defined limit where on the gravity side this is described by Chern Simons. ADS3, CFT2 has of course been very well studied, but where you can see in a limiting procedure how this correspondence reduces to, on the bulk side, Chern Simons theories of non-relativistic gravity, and on the field theory side, near BPS limits of conformal field theories. So that's the plan of the talk, and time permits, small outlook. Are there any questions about the motivation and overall scope at this point? Please do not hesitate to interrupt me. So, okay, Newton-Cartan geometry. And by the way, I always have a disclaimer because I once gave an entire 1 hour talk, and then somebody asked me at the end of the talk, yeah, but what does it have non-commutative geometry to do with the thing you're talking about? So NC stands for Newton-Cartan and not non-commutative. Of course, I was asked this because I was at a conference where non-commutative geometry was sort of in the focus. But so NC stands for Newton-Cartan. And as the name indicates, it was introduced by Cartan almost 80 years ago to geometrize Newtonian gravity. There's, of course, that was quite active work, and you see many names here that I'm sure you all recognize that worked on this in the last 80 years. Now, I think a paper that was very helpful to push this was a paper by Eric and collaborators. I always forget the year. Is it 2010 or 2012?
When I was young.
Okay, so some little time ago. But so while Newton-Cartan geometry was originally formulated in metric formulation, actually a more modern approach that was adopted in this paper, field-bound formulation, actually was very instructive to show the underlying symmetry principle. And as I said, Newton-Cartan geometry is what Riemannian geometry is to Poincaré invariance. Newton-Cartan is the geometry associated to the geometry that makes local Barkmann symmetry. Now, what's Barkmann symmetry? I'm sure you, if you don't know it, you know the Galilean algebra. It has rotations. Sorry, I wrote it here down in two space dimensions. But you have rotations, translations, a Hamiltonian, and boosts G. These are the commutation relations. That's the Galilean algebra. Now, the Barkmann algebra, which is an algebra that has one more generator, has a central extension in this commutator between translations and boosts. And N here, the central element, is basically the generator of mass. Of course, in massive Galilean theories, mass, and since you don't have Lorentz symmetry, mass and energy are distinct, and that's why you need an extra generator beyond the Hamiltonian. So what Eric and company showed is that by gauging this algebra, you generate, you derive Newton-Cartan geometry. So by applying the Einstein quote unquote equivalence principle to this algebra, that's the underlying symmetry structure of Newton-Cartan. In fact, there are sort of different manifestations, sort of on a more technical level, of this manifestation of an Einstein equivalence principle, but now for the Barkmann algebra. So you can gauge Poincaré, special geometries you can actually, I reviewed here for you what it is in the case that you know. So Einstein equivalence principle can be seen as gauging Poincaré. You can get examples by cosets of Poincaré over Lorentz. Another actually way to think about Riemannian geometry is to apply a Noether procedure to relativistic field theories. If you have a relativistic field theory with a global Poincaré symmetry, that's why it's relativistic, you use the Noether procedure to make that global symmetry into a local symmetry, you will be led into Riemannian geometry. And these things have their analogs for Newton-Cartan geometry. I just want to highlight, this want to sort of more think about this gauging procedure, but there are also Gossets and Luther procedures. And actually, and this I will review in one transparency, I think it's helpful if you have not seen this geometry, that the geometric structures that appear in Euler-Catan geometry can also be understood from null reductions or from C going to infinity limits. So there are sort of a range of methods to arrive at these geometries, and each method has their own advantage and limitations in some sense. So this is probably a transparency that Eric showed you as well in his talk, but I have to show it, I think, to give some understanding of what the geometry is. I told you what the Barkmann algebra is, these generators. If you want to gauge this symmetry, you have to introduce gauge fields for each generator, for the Hamiltonian, translations, boosts, rotations. This central extension has another U1 gauge field. And then, okay, I will actually not go through the work, but by imposing appropriate curvature constraints, you can gauge this algebra and turn space translations and time translations into diffeomorphisms. And then you have a remaining set of internal transformations that are the rest. And by imposing suitable curvature constraints, you are led to a number of independent fields, like so, that characterize the geometry. What is the physical interpretation? This is the time-like field bind, so it's your notion of clock. This is space-like field bind. If you square it, you get the notion of space, a metric on spatial slices. And a very important extra feature is, on top of that, at every point in the geometry, you have a U1 field living. That's really part of the geometry, and it's associated to this mass operator or central charge transformation. Okay, and these transform in a certain way under diffeomorphisms, under local boosts, and under local rotations, spatial rotations. So here's then sort of the picture. It's a little bit more fancy version of the bread. This is your clock form, this is your space-like field bind. M is this gauge field that lives. And then it's actually important to realize that there are sort of three cases depending on the properties of this time-like field bind. One is where the time-like field bind is exact. That's of course the case where you have an absolute globally well-defined time. That is, you know, the new Newton-Cartan geometry in its original form, the one that Cartan found. Not surprisingly, Newtonian gravity has absolute time. So in Cartan's original formulation, he assumed that the clock form was exact. Then there's T and C geometry, no condition on tau. And as I will show you in the next transparency, that actually means that the geometry has intrinsic torsion. So if you think about Riemannian geometry, there you can add torsion as another structure on top of your field. Here, there's a torsion that's intrinsic in the sense that it's determined by this metric field, or metric complex formed by these fields. And a very important in-between case is twistless torsion. So where you do have a condition on tau, but it's not closed, but it's hypersurface orthogonal. So it can be written as a function, a local function, times the derivative of something. You still have torsion there, but of a special nature. And in that case, even though you don't have a notion of absolute time, there is a preferred foliation in equal time slices. And incidentally, so in this in-between case, which is actually physically very relevant, the torsion can be measured by a vector, which is basically this acceleration vector, which is the Lie derivative of this clock along the time direction. Now, so as I tried to stress in its original formulation, Cartan didn't include torsion. He also didn't need it because, as I tried to emphasize, Newtonian gravity doesn't have, it has absolute time. But what was kind of interesting is that in a setting that I cannot really explain in very detail, but Jelle and collaborators and I were looking at holography for Lipschitz spacetimes, for bulk Lipschitz spacetimes. And then we saw that on the boundary field theory, there was an induced boundary geometry that was of the Noether-Cartan type, but of a generalized Noether-Cartan type, namely involving torsion. And the way that works is like this. This maybe looks very technical. It also is, but it's not so difficult. But the point is that, so I introduced for you the time-like field bind, space-like field binds. Of course, you also have inverses of these field binds, an inverse time-like field bind, and an inverse inverse space-like field bind. And what you would like, of course, is to make combinations of these fields. So we know, you know, their transformation properties, but you want to make combinations of these fields that are invariant under the internal transformations. Just to say, like in Riemannian geometry, when we have objects without tangent space indices, we know they're invariant under local Lorentz, right? We want the same here. Here works a little bit more complicated, basically because you can see here that, for example, this field bind is not invariant under local boosts. But the great thing is that M is not invariant either. So basically, by combining things in an appropriate way, and that are these combinations here, these V hats and these H bars, this phi tilde, then you can make objects that are invariant under the local remaining local symmetries, namely Galilean boosts and local spatial rotation. And so what you then find is a generalization of Noether-Cartan that we call torsional Noether-Cartan, for which one choice of connection is like this. So here you see something very analogous to the Christoffel connection, and here some extra part that, but this is of course for the spatial metric, but here an extra part that depends on the time-like field binds. And this is what I mean with the fact that this has intrinsic torsion. The anti-symmetric part here is determined in terms of the field binds. And you can check, of course, that if tau is closed, this is zero, so then the torsion is zero. And this connection then satisfies a nice property, namely the analog of metric compatibility. And this connection, you know, having a connection is of course important because, just like in Riemannian geometry, once you want to start coupling the theory or making it dynamical, you need the notion of covariant derivatives. So you need an analog of the Christoffel connection. If this also sort of, if this gauging procedure, I don't know, confuses you, but you find it very sort of complicated. And there's other ways to think about these torsional Noether-Cartan structures that I think are useful to illustrate. Actually, Julia and Nikolai already saw this, not for the case of torsion, but in the other cases in 1993. If you think about a Riemannian metric, and you write down the most general Riemannian metric that has a null Killing isometry, and it takes this form. And here you actually see in this form the Noether-Cartan fields tau, m, and h appearing. So, so another way to arrive at these geometric structures and their transformation properties is by doing null reduction. Interestingly, there are also yet other approaches to see these Noether-Cartan geometric structures appearing. So this was before this, so maybe I should start here. Eric and company found a nice way to take a C going to infinity limit. Now, if you think about it, you cannot just take a C going to infinity limit of the field binds corresponding to the Poincaré algebra, basically because you have an extra generator if you just do the counting in the Barkmann algebra. You have the central extension. So the way to resolve it is to add a U1 field to Poincaré, write down the field binds of that, and so combine these relativistic field binds in an appropriate way and with C, speed of light dependent factors, and do a limit. So that's a nice paper where you see Noether-Cartan geometry from a limit of, you can say, relativistic structures appearing. But you need to add another U1 field to do the job. And I hope that's clear because of the size of the algebra. Dieter, a year ago, he also saw new Ticketan structures by directly expanding the metric and the inverse metric in powers of 1 over C, following earlier work that was done by Daudkour. And okay, I can say more about this, but that's again another talk. But I just want to show and say here that, so you see here the time-like field bind appearing in the leading order part of the metric. You see the space-like field bind appearing in the next to leading, and you see also these M fields. So they naturally really come out of the C going to infinity limit. Also some other fields, but it's more like to give you flavor that these fields are naturally sitting in Riemannian metrics. Are there any questions of this mini introduction to Newton-Cartan geometry? I've not used it for anything yet. I'm going to use.
Also about this case in which the time direction is not inducing a foliation. You know, there are statements like going on the QEL sometimes that this induces a closed time-like curve, or that it's not physical in some sense. You know, can you comment?
Not having a foliation in equal time slices violates causality. So that begs the question, what's the relevance of this most general case? The short answer to that, which I think is true and summarizes very well, that means that probably when you make them dynamical, there's something sick about them. And you would actually like to have, if you try to find an action principle, and we're working on this, if you find an action principle for these geometries, you actually like to that your equations of motions deselect these cases, so that they. So that's for the dynamical case. This does not make the general case irrelevant, because as a background geometry to which a field theory can couple, there's nothing wrong with it. You don't care about its causality; it's just a background structure, right? So as a fixed background geometry. It actually plays a very important role, and actually I have a transparency on that in the sense that to describe the most general response function of a non-relativistic field theory to response to these geometric structures and describe the full energy momentum tensor as a response to this geometry, you need to be to have no condition on tau mu. So the short answer is TNC is relevant as a background geometry to describe the most general coupling of a field theory to a fixed background. I have a transparency, but maybe illustrate.
If you have a Mantle field reading on this fixed background with tau that doesn't induce foliation, you wouldn't see non-causal effects.
I don't think it would. No, precisely. It wouldn't cause non-causal effects for the matter fields. No, in fact, you need to have this to describe the most general action. I have a transparency that hopefully shows this more clearly with equations. Any other questions? Okay, then, so far I've introduced the geometry, a lot of motivation. Now I just want to give you a taste of of the appearance of these geometries in various non-relativistic settings. I think one of the cutest cases, and also Eric worked on this, is so if this is a useful geometry, just like a relativistic particle, you have a very nice world line action of a relativistic particle coupling to Riemannian geometry, there should be a nice covariant action of a non-relativistic particle coupling to that. And actually, one way to get at that is by null reduction. So if you take the action for a relativistic particle, you'll know it, of course, the coupling to G. You couple it to a target space with a null killing vector, the one I just gave you, so where you see the Newton-Cartan structures and get the right symmetry properties. Then basically by going through some steps, you want to eliminate the youth direction, the null direction. And you do that by solving the equations of motions for this null direction and setting the null momentum on shell. And basically the null momentum becomes the mass, and then one arrives at an action like so. Okay, you also do a Legendre transformation because you want to look at configurations for fixed light cone momentum. And then you see here a nice expression of how a non-relativistic particle couples to these, to the M field, the H field, and the tau field. And this action does this local torsional Newton-Cotton target space symmetries. By varying this action, you get the equation of motion, would of course be the equation of motion of a non-relativistic particle. And satisfyingly, if you evaluate it on flat Newton-Cotton space, but not entirely flat, but where you have a Newtonian potential switched on, you get Newton's law. Yeah, incidentally, I should have said it before, but now I get the chance. So you might wonder, where does the Newtonian potential sit in Newton-Cotton geometry? So it essentially sits in the time component of this M field. So this reduces Newton's law, but also in more general curved Newton-Cotton geometries, a generalized TNC geodesic equation. I already said this, so the concept of coupling to a background geometry is quite useful. And actually, there's some really nice early examples in the fractional quantum Hall effect by Son and collaborators that precisely made use of that in condensed matter systems. So it's actually very interesting that this has direct applications also in condensed matter systems, where you can say, in principle, these methods could have been used for the last 80 years, but they have not because maybe there's less focus in the condensed matter community or was on, you know, geometric structures. But it is very suitable for that. And so there are many papers, dot, 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 dot here, and a recent paper by Eric, what he talked about here. And also in hydro, there are nice applications. But so, and this maybe answers some equations also. Shira's question. So how does it really work? So what does it buy to you, this covariant coupling of non-relativistic field theories to Newton-Cotton geometry? So just like for relativistic cases, you would get some action functional depending on g mu nu, the metric that describes the coupling. Here there would be some action functional depending on these Newton-Cotton structures. Here I've chosen just convenient to phrase it in terms of the U1 field, the inverse spatial metric, and the inverse time-like field by. But you can choose here any set of independent quantities with up or down. And I mean, the upshot of what I want to show here is that just like we know to get a symmetric 0-2 tensor by varying relativistic actions with respect to the metric, here the responses are actually naturally a 1-1 tensor with no further symmetry properties, and a mass current T mu. This is precisely what you expect for a non-relativistic theory. First of all, there should be an extra mass current because mass is not equal to energy, and basically because there's no Lorentz boost symmetry. There's no, of course, this thing is still symmetric in ij, but it's not symmetric in the zero I indices anymore because you don't have Lorentz boost. But here you see how these responses are defined with respect to the variations of these fields, and they have very clear physical interpretations. This thing is the energy density, the momentum flux, the energy flux, spatial stress. Varying m will give you the mass current. Time component is mass density, mass flux. And of course, there are some symmetries that lead to word identities, but they're a little bit different than the ones you know from the Lorentzian case. If there's particle number conservation, if you have a U1 symmetry, the local Galilean boosts tell that mass flux is the same as momentum flux. So this one, TTI, is the same as this. And there's symmetric spatial stress. Now, coming back to your question, if you want to describe the most general energy current, basically, density and flux, you need to have this variation here unconstrained. So and think of V, and V is the inverse of tau. So if tau would be constrained, then also V would be constrained. So, if, for example, in the case of Newton-Cartan, you can only get the variation of the divergence of this, because then this would be a total derivative. So, to characterize, to access the most general responses, you need the unconstrained torsional Newton-Cartan geometry as a background geometry. But it doesn't cause bad causality things for the actual matter here, or on the dynamical level of the geometry itself. And not surprisingly, but many of these, these things didn't exist until some years. You can get nice covariant forms of diffeomorphism border densities, and in the case of scale invariants, which interested us in particular because of our holographic applications, also trace border identities. And all of those can be nicely formulated, in fact, using this Newton-Cartan connection in terms of this geometry. So here's, for example, the diffeomorphism on-shell border identity, energy momentum with respect to this new connection. So this is not the Christoffel connection, but the one I showed you before, plus torsion terms, plus some force term that says how, tells you how mass density couples to the gradient of the Newtonian potential, that becomes your on-shell diffeomorphism border density, basically energy momentum conservation. I just want to stress the underlying geometric structure is Newton-Cartan here. Still fully diffeomorphism invariant, but the local symmetries, tangent space symmetries, are different. Just to make it a little bit more concrete, so a particular field theory that has Barkmann symmetry is the Schrödinger field theory. I wrote it here down, covariantly coupling to an arbitrary space-time, but you know it, of course. It's like psi bar, phi dot, and complex conjugate, and gradient of phi squared. But here you see, you can, you know, once you know that you want to, once you know that you're interested in it, you can almost guess it. But it's remarkable that this covariant coupling was only written down, sort of, this is now, well, by now it's 5 years ago. But so that's where Newton-Cartan geometry comes in coupling field theories. You can also couple covariantly the Lipschitz model. When it comes to dynamical Newton-Cartan, so the theory of gravity that you get when you let this geometry fluctuate, first of all, I should say, just to not, this sounds maybe confusing, but there are different versions. There are based a little bit depending on what symmetries you want to have in your, ultimately in your theory of gravity, there are different proposals and different actions. I just wanted to say here, and I will not go in details, is that what's kind of interesting, one of the first things we found at the level of making this geometry dynamical was that Horava-Lipschitz gravity, which I'm sure you have heard of it or have heard talks about it here, which in its original formulation, it does not have full diffeomorphism invariance, but only foliation-preserving diffeomorphisms, can actually be recast in a covariant, fully diffeomorphism invariant way by not using a Lorentzian type metric, but by using Newton-Cartan variables. We showed in the paper, and I don't want to go into details. This is not to say that the only way of making Newton-Cartan dynamical is Horava-Lipschitz. It's more the other way. Horava-Lipschitz can be reformulated in a diffeomorphism invariant way using this geometry. Of course, you can think of many more interesting and complicated cases where you have the gravity theory and you couple that to some kind of non-relativistic field theory. You can add supersymmetry and all that. And there are various, I'm not complete here, but there are various works that try to do this for spin 0, 1, 3 halves particles, etc. Just to say, for example, there's a Galilean electrodynamics theory, a non-relativistic electrodynamics theory that you can couple to TNC. And actually people here, Lorenzo and Shira and Zicky and Kevin in Copenhagen are examining this GED further. I think I am, in view of the time, I'm gonna skip that detail, but just one note. If you think about Newton-Cartan geometry and you're interested in holography, there are different ways that Newton-Cartan or some non-Lorentzian geometry can enter the scope of holography. I try to sort of show that here. So of course in the, and we have seen realizations of these, I should say, concretely, but this is more like schematically. Of course, in the paradigm of holography, ADS-CFT, what do we have in the book? A dynamical theory of Riemannian geometry with a cosmological constant, and on the boundary, a relativistic field theory, in fact, conformal field theory. So you can say in the bulk there is Lorentzian geometry, and on the boundary there's a background Lorentzian geometry. Then, and this is actually what led us, Jelle and me and collaborators, into Newton-Cartan. You can wonder what happens to non-ADS spacetimes, like so-called Lipschitz spacetimes that are sort of deformed anti-de Sitter spacetimes, but still within a Riemannian context in the bulk. You can wonder what type of boundary field theories do you have, and in particular, what is the background geometry to which these boundary theories couple. And so there we have seen various instances, long papers on it, that for example, if you do Lipschitz holography, so Lipschitz spacetimes, here in the bulk, then the boundary geometry, or the geometry that's induced on the boundary, is torsional Newton-Cartan. But so, now you can take one more step in your holographic thinking, and that is say, now that we have learned that Newton-Cartan and non-Lorentzian geometries are interesting geometries, let's put them dynamical in the bulk and do holography for that. And of course, also in these cases, you would have, in a sense, even more naturally non-relativistic field theories on the boundary. In a certain sense, you can say this is the natural habitat of non-relativistic field theories or non-relativistic field theories with some scaling. Because to have some holography, you need some scaling of having such theories in a holographic context. Is it clear what I'm saying? Because for example, for the experts, Lipschitz spacetimes here, you cannot find them as pure gravity solutions. You always have to add matter fields if you want to do it in a Riemannian context. Here, the Lipschitz spacetimes can be supported fully by the geometry without adding matter fields. In some sense, that's a more minimal setup. I think I'm going to skip this. I'm just going to say, because I want to reach the last. I'll skip the last part and do this, because I like to keep it in time. A natural question to ask, certainly if you're a string theorist like me, is there a place for Newton-Cartan geometry in string theory? As I mentioned before, non-relativistic symmetries have certainly been seen, the actual symmetries in various instances, in limits of string theory. So there should be a natural role for the geometry. And we started to explore that, and the story is certainly not finished yet, but let me give you the highlights of what we know so far. I showed you that you could get the covariant coupling of a non-relativistic particle to torsional Newton-Cartan by null reduction. So for us, it was a very natural point to say, well, let's take the Polyakov action and do a null reduction. Here. Um, So you can do this. I'm skipping details, but the essence is the same. Remember, I told you for a non-relativistic particle, you basically integrate out the null direction. That is, you impose its equation of motion, and you do a Lagrangian, a Legendre transformation. You can do the same now. Of course, you don't have a momentum, but you have a momentum current in the null direction. But it's conserved as a consequence of its equation of motion. And you know, after I just give you the highlights, after various steps, you can arrive at such actions. And so what I want you to take away from this mostly is that you can arrive at actions, covariant actions, for non-relativistic strings that probe a non-relativistic target space. And so in this action, actually, the world sheet theory itself is also non-relativistic. It only contains single time derivatives. And this begs, of course, the rather tantalizing question, you know, is there some kind of set of consistency conditions analogous to beta functions that tell you what the dynamics of this target non-relativistic target space is, given consistency of these non-relativistic string actions? And I should say again, there, you know, of course, non-relativistic string actions have seen before. This is the classic non-relativistic string action in a flat background, but this can be covariantized a la Polyakov, let's say. And I just say here in words, and you can ask about it in private, that actually this non-relativistic string action has actually been seen before for specific background fields in the string literature, namely in very well-studied limits of AdCFT. That's the so-called Kruschensky limit. It's a limit you can do on the n equals 4 side and on the strings on the ADS side, played a big role in integrability. So basically, the long wavelength limit of an SU2 Heisenberg spin chain gives the so-called Lifshitz sigma model. And in fact, this is a covariantization for special background fields of this Lifshitz model. So this connects to actions, to non-relativistic string actions that have been seen as integrable systems in certain limits of the ADS-CFT correspondence. Dimension. Yes?
What is the critical dimension? When you have just a flat non-relativistic.
We don't know. It's a good question. We have not computed.
Really? I mean, it must be so simple.
Well, we haven't had the time to quantize the theory.
I would guess that it is no limit.
There's no limit. So basically, that you have the analog of Lorentz invariance, but it's not Lorentz invariance in any dimension. Could
well. The reasoning in the case of the relativistic case is really the local. Tau sigma parametrization.
No, that's right.
At the quantum level.
Yeah.
I think that is kind of trivial in the case.
Okay, good. I sympathize with you say. You say it's relatively simple. We had our. I think it's a very interesting question, but. And I invite everybody who has time to do it to quantize this theory and look at the analog of beta functions. And it's not that we don't think it's important, it's just lack of time. But it's a great question, and we hope to have the answers in the future if somebody else not finds it before. But I think it could well be undetermined. In the last 5 minutes, then, I'll say something about, I still have time to cover some of the last thing, about this is now a very concrete way where you see many of these elements appearing in a setting that's extremely well-defined, namely the ADS3 CFT2 correspondence. And why is that interesting? Because Chern-Simons theories of gravity, as we know in the relativistic case, are very nice toy models of gravity. They are trivial in the sense that they're topological, but they're still show many interesting features. So likewise, it's a very natural idea to pursue here in a non-relativistic context. In fact, even before, well, I cannot really go through all the history, it's sort of written here, but the upshot is that, and I'll give some formulas really in a second, that, you know, just like Chern-Simons theory on SR2, is Einstein gravity, three dimensions with the cosmological constant, or Chern-Simons theory on the Poincaré is Einstein and gravity in three dimensions without a cosmological constant. Likewise, you can construct Chern-Simons theories on non-relativistic algebras, and they will be hence non-relativistic three-dimensional gravity theories. Of course, that's not so trivial, but actually there's an interesting paper already, kind of visionary paper of 2009 by Papageorgiou and Schwerz, where they looked at Galilean Chern-Simons. Then Eric and collaborators and Jelle Janglai and myself, we looked at that also more recently. And so the upshot is that I want to tell, there's more to it, also interesting supersymmetric versions that Eric found. But the upshot is that a Chern-Simons theory, and now it sounds very esoteric, but it's not so esoteric. I'll show you these algebras, but on some alternate real form of the so-called Newton-Hooke algebra provides a three-dimensional Chern-Simons theory and a corresponding limiting field theory on the boundary that can be considered to be the non-relativistic analog of ADS-3-CFT2. Now, how does it work? First, some words on the Chern-Simons theory. So here's the Chern-Simons action. In terms of gauge field A. And for this to be non-trivial, for this trace to be non-trivial, we need an invariant bilinear form. As is well known, this is rather a non-trivial requirement for non-relativistic algebras, basically because they're non-semi-simple. And actually, if you try to do this for the Bargmann algebra, you find that the bilinear form is degenerate. So you don't get a non-trivial Chern-Simons action. It turns out, and this was also used in this 2009 paper, that there is actually an interesting extension of the Bargmann algebra, where you now add a non-trivial commutator between two boosts, this S generator, that does the job. So incidentally, this is an eight-dimensional algebra. The Bargmann in three dimensions is seven, but with this extra generator here, it's eight. And then I should also say there, you can consider this sort of as the analog of, and in a way that I'll specify more, of the Poincaré, say, in three dimensions. Then there's also an analog with the cosmological constant turned on, and that's then this rather esoteric and ancient-looking name, Newton-Hooke. That's a deformation in which you turn on a cosmological constant, which takes place in these commutators. So two translations now commute to S proportional to the cosmological constant. And likewise, the Hamiltonian also commutes to boosts. But that's the Newton-Hooke. I think the name is a little bit unfortunate because you really sounds like you're doing 1700 physics. But a Chern-Simons theory. So you can do a Chern-Simons theory on this algebra. And now what I want to show you a little bit diagrammatically is that Chern-Simons theory is related to the Chern-Simons theory of ADS-3 gravity with a well-defined limit. Can I have 2 more minutes? Or I don't want to, I think it's bad taste to go over time.
Yeah.
So it only will take 2 transparencies to make this point clear. I first make a statement that's actually true for any dimensions, and then I apply this to the case of ADS-3 CFT2. But so let's take a step back and think about a setup where you have a d-dimensional CFT with some U1 flavor symmetry and a BPS bound and some free coupling constant. very generically, such a theory admits a limit in which you zoom in to the spectrum close to the lightest charged state of the theory on the cylinder. And actually, what's algebraically happening in this limit, in the zooming in to the BPS bound, is by doing an Einhorn-Wigner contraction of the conformal group cross U1. Because we said we have some U1 flavor symmetry. It can also be an R symmetry. And that's essentially what we want to do, not just in D dimensions, but in for two-dimensional field theory and for three-dimensional bulk, with this, with the extra ingredient that actually in the three-dimensional bulk case and the two-dimensional CFT case, it's actually very natural for reasons I can explain to add a second U1. It's basically because rotations are abelian. But the upshot of it is that we start with a theory with SO22. We add two U1s to that. One U1 is a sort of a spectator U1 because we want to combine it with the rotation group. The other U1 is related to this near BPS bound. This theory on the boundary has an SL2R cross U1 squared symmetry. You can now do a well-defined limit both on the bulk and the boundary. In the bulk, you get this Chern-Simons theory on Newton-Hooke, so a non-relativistic theory of gravity in three dimensions. On the boundary, this group contracts to the algebra consisting of a direct product of the centrally extended Poincaré group in two dimensions. But I've written here, this algebra has many forms, but just maybe forget everything here except this transparency. For aficionados of the conformal group, you might recognize your almost conformal group, but what it has is there's dilatation operators, but the k's do not act anymore as special conformal generators because they commute to these extra generators n and s. So this is some kind of new algebra that one finds there. And interestingly, this eight-dimensional algebra has an infinite-dimensional lift to not just the Virazoro, which you would find here, Virazoro cross U1, but a warped Virazoro algebra. So this whole picture indicates many things. First of all, that non-relativistic bulk geometries are connected to ADS3 gravity in a very well-defined limit. It also indicates that the corresponding field theories, two-dimensional field theories, are some avatar of ordinary CFTs, but now with a warped Virazoro algebra. And and moreover that, I will skip these details here because I want to stop, but moreover that this non-relativistic geometry that plays a role in the bulk is actually a very natural geometry because what happens here, remember I drew the bread, right, where this is tau, and these are the spatial slices. If you really look at the details how the bulk geometry works here, tau is not time-like anymore, but this radial becomes your radial coordinate, and this becomes a 2D Lorentzian metric. So take the picture here that the bread has a very natural holographic direction, namely, you know, the perpendicular direction to the bread. It's in fact the simplest emergence of space-time that you can think of. All you have to do, and it comes out naturally in this limit, is to not think of tau as the time-like direction, but an emerging radial direction. That's the way the holography works in this limiting case. So, okay, that we hope to study further, because, and also maybe in higher ADS CFT settings. I should say this geometry we call not Noether-Cartan, but pseudo-Noether-Cartan. Okay, basically because, and it's not a weak rotation, but something analogous. We have just put in time in this spatial part of the metric and promoted this to space. But you see here a very natural slicing of the bulk space-time. Okay, there are many things one can mention. I think I already mentioned quite a lot for the non-relativistic string theory. And we're also at the level of what I just told you at the very end. this limit of ADS-CFT. There are many open problems that we are looking at, like the whole representation theory of these novel type of conformal field theories. Want to look at embedded more, you know, in some supergravity theories, the role of black holes, etc., etc. I will stop here. Thanks. No problem. I have a lot of information.
So my question was, is there a some analog of Einstein's equations that appears?
Okay, I didn't say that, so you didn't miss anything. At many levels, yes. Let me say, first and foremost, in Cartan's work, there's an analog of Einstein's equation, namely a covariant way of writing Poisson equations. That was his goal. The Poisson equation in Newtonian gravity. And you can use Newton-Cartan geometry to write basically the Poisson equation, which would be the analog of Einstein equation, covariant. That's at the most original level. One likes to enlarge this because this is a very special case, of course, Newtonian gravity, where, as I indicated, there is a very stringent condition on the time-like field by, namely that it's closed, that you have absolute time. And indeed, by taking limits, so there are different ways to get more general equations of motions. You can take, and that's what Dieter van Bleeken did, you can, for example, take limits, C going to infinity limits of the Einstein equations. Eric has looked at various forms of Newton-Cartan actions and also another way is to, you know, take Einstein's equations of motions and null reduce them. So it's not to be non-committal, but there exists various equations of motions. One thing that is still sort of seems to be missing is a good action formulation for what would give you, for example. Even the simplest case of the Newton equation, there doesn't exist an action principle, and there should be some kind of geometry that can be used to write down this action principle and then ultimately get equations of motions. Okay, and that's some of the work that I alluded to we're working on that has to do with, you know, what is the theory of the seventh corner? The seventh corner of the physics group. But it's more like various. There exist various versions of equations of motion, but the ultimate thing has not been written down in my eyes yet.
So none of them is derived from some version of Einstein's work.
Well, no. Well, let's say Dieter van Bleek. Yeah.
You could take a full relativistic Einstein,
right,
and then null reduce. But you're
saying
there's nothing that gives you Newton's equations directly.
There's one thing that gives you Newton equations. For example, the C going to infinity limit of the Einstein equation. Not the null reduction, but the C going to, because null reduction and C going to infinity is not the same. In certain cases, it gives the same structures, but just in details, it's not the same. But just to say, in the C going to infinity limit, you can get Newton's equations. But from the Einstein equations, I think it's also important to say there's equations of motions and an action principle. There's no action principle yet.
Okay.
But
following on his question, I didn't fully get the answer. You mentioned that in the Cartan case, there is a Poisson equation.
Yeah.
Now, is that a condition of consistency? Like Einstein equation is a condition.
Yeah, well, okay. That's a very sharp question, because you're basically saying, in my eyes, you're saying, how do you put the source in this equation? You can covariantize the left-hand side. You know, del squared phi, you can covariantize nicely with the Newton-Cartan connection. You know, basically what I don't know if you studied Newton-Cartan, but basically you package del squared phi in a nice geometric way, like you even know it's packaged in the non-relativistic Newtonian limit of GR, but the question is the source. And that's where also our work to appear comes in, where we think we understand better the principle that puts the source. to our knowledge, this source is put there by hand. It's not obtained. It's just you put the mass density there because you know that's what Newton did. But it's not understood from some kind of word identity or from you know, a Bianchi identity. So it's a very good question, and that's where the key lies to understanding what the action principle is.
Any other questions? Thank you.